Hey everyone, Sam Evans here, and in today's video, I'm going to give you the cure to shiny object syndrome. Now, if you don't know what shiny object syndrome is, it basically goes like this. So, you know what you need to do, and that's very obvious, but you don't really want to do what you need to do, and so you go to Facebook or Instagram or any other social media platform, and you just start scrolling, and you're basically looking for something that makes you salivate, or really just emotionally influences you so much to the point that it takes you out of your current reality that's probably not very good, and takes you to some fantasy land where everything's amazing and everything goes awesome and you feel really good. But, and of course you get that through like buying something or trying something new or basically doing anything that isn't the shitty thing that you know you need to do right now. So, of course, because it feels so good and it makes us forget about what we need to do, we're like, this is it. This is, I have found God. And, you know, whatever this object is, some new piece of technology, some new strategy, some new method, some new book, some new fucking anything, right? Just anything that isn't just the simple, mundane thing that you absolutely know is the thing you need to do, but one of these, shiny object. So then you do that thing, but then it turns out to just basically bring you right back to the thing you needed to do anyway. And then this loop repeats, because now you've tried out the shiny object, all of its emotional dopamine-causing attributes have faded out. You've now like become immune to this object's shininess. And now it looks the same as the other shitty object that you had, which was the thing that you had to do. And so you come back and you confront this thing anyway, and you still have to do it, but you don't want to, so you go back onto your social media and you just keep having a feed. They literally even call it a feed, because you're basically like a battery hen just in some cage with like a intravenous pipe coming straight into your mouth, just being fed information containing shiny objects. And so then you spot another one. Same thing repeats, you like the feeling, makes you forget about the reality, which is kind of shit, and wave happens again, you become immune to it, it looks just like every other object, cycle repeats. Life ends, and you're like, oh shit. So that's shiny object syndrome, and basically everyone has it. It's actually rare to find somebody who doesn't have it. And in this video I'm going to show you how to not have it. So let's get started. So I basically got like 9 things. And the first one, now what have we got, is to invert philosophy. So it all really begins with philosophy, like everything, and if you want to see it cool, this is kind of off topic, but if you want to see something cool, go to Wikipedia and find anything on Wikipedia. I don't care if it's a damn armadillo or like something to do with Russia or just anything, right? Any page on Wikipedia, and click the second link in each description and just keep clicking the second link in every single description and just see where it takes you. And I know where it'll take you. You'll end up on one page, philosophy. Doesn't matter where you go in the Wikipedia tree, you're going to land in philosophy. That's the root of everything. So, of course, we're going to begin with philosophy because everything starts from there. And really, when you want to stop suffering with shiny object syndrome, you need to invert your philosophy, because most people live with this philosophy that new is good and old is bad. And if it's like really popular, it's good. And if pretty much everyone knows about it and it's not that hypey, it's bad, right? That's what most people live with. That's a very, very simplistic way of saying it. But you basically want to turn that thing upside down. You want to think new is bad, and you want to think that old is good, and you also want to think that popular is dangerous and most probably wrong, and unpopular is, like, probably good, right? It all starts by inverting your philosophy. And really, a lot of people think that what we do defines us, and what, like, we as a person do defines us, and what we as a company do defines us and our success and all of these things. But the inverse of this would be what we don't do defines us more than what we do. And what we don't do as a company more defines us and more influences our success than what we do do. And if you want, like, two examples of this, like real life case studies, well, one is like In-N-Out Burger, right? So it's a, like a fast food chain, right? They only have like a meat burger, and I'm pretty sure they only make it with one patty, two patties, or three. That's it. And then they've got some fries. That's all they have. They don't spend any money on advertising. Their advertising budget is and forever will be zero. And they are, like, probably the strongest fast food chain in America. So they make a lot of money. They've always made a lot of money. And people still go to them. They don't advertise at all. And they also have survived throughout many recessions. Now, McDonald's, on the other hand, it started with this playbook. It only had, like, a meat patty burger and some fries. And that was basically it. And it was very popular, and it always was successful, but then some person with shiny object syndrome, or multiple people with it, came in and started screwing with things. And they started adding lots of crap to the menu, right? Shiny objects. And then, of course, they were like, let's add a cafe to our menu, because all of these people eating all of these burgers would love a coffee. And McDonald's brand really goes with some coffee. And a salad, why not? You know, and they just kept adding crap. And basically, now they're in a lot of trouble. And they forgot what got them there. But In-N-Out Burger used what got McDonald's to where they were to get them there. And then they didn't forget about it. They still kept it. And so they've basically defeated McDonald's with their own playbook, which is kind of interesting. And another company is like B&H Photo Video. I find this one fascinating. It's a physical store in Manhattan, but it's also an online store. And it's where everyone goes to buy photography equipment, even online, even in the days where Amazon exists. Like, to find a category such as technology where the business doesn't own the merchandise that they're selling. So they're just they're basically like a platform for selling other people's goods, right? Basically, none of those platforms can exist and win against Amazon. It's like game over. The only way you really can have competitive advantage against Amazon is if you sell your own things, because Amazon can't compete because they can't sell your thing. But they'll still probably, like, knock it off or do something, right? So to find a category where a business beats Amazon today, online and offline, and in a category where they don't sell their own stuff, B&H Photo Video is an amazing case study of this. They're one store, and they sell over $1.2 billion a year. And get this, they're closed on Saturdays. Not only the store, but the bloody website too. Who closes their website? But they do it because it's their, like, faith or something, they're Jewish or something. I think they close on Saturday or Sunday, one of those days. And, you know, they don't do that. But, you know, the whole philosophy is you should be open all the time, always. But by not doing some things, you know, B&H is really, same with In-N-Out Burger, have really, like, that, what they don't do is it creates things that other people talk about, which is their marketing. So by not doing something, they're actually doing something, and it's more powerful than the actions that other companies are doing. So you've got to think about it a bit different. Sometimes not doing something makes more of a statement than doing it, and sometimes not doing something is more potent and more powerful than doing something a lot. Kind of interesting. That's where we begin, philosophy. Number two is you want to take your finger, like, off the trigger, right? And you want to stop emotionally and impulsively, like, shooting people. And I'll explain what I mean in a sec here. So, most people, just reading my note. So most people, you know, they've basically got their finger on the trigger and it's loaded and it's cocked, it's ready. So the moment anything comes out and it kind of, like, affects them, they bam, it's already gone. before they can even think about it. Like, should I pull the trigger? Like, is this a thing that I should shoot? Or should I not shoot it? Is this a civilian? Right? They basically just fire. That's what most people are like. This is like impulsiveness, right? And to do that, you need to do something that is life-changing, quite honestly. The moment I could do this is the moment that, like, I really, everything changed. And what you need to be able to do is take yourself from within your thoughts and within your emotions, and you need to, like, break yourself off and view yourself from, like, the third person. So you can do this when you're not in an intense situation, and you'll probably be able to do it. It's another thing to do it when you're in the middle of some heat, right? But imagine yourself right now, just in the third person. So, like, I'm sure you've played a video game before, and you're looking down at, like, this person, you're behind them, and you can basically control them and make them go where you want them to go, right? So if you can view yourself like that in your situation, and then you ask yourself, hey, what am I, like, thinking? What am I feeling? And if there's a strange thought pattern that happens, start, like, catch it, and then trace it back up the tree and be like, how the hell did I get here? Or that caused that, that caused that, that caused that. And then dismiss it and basically cut off the branch of that thought. And then you start to be able to, like, control yourself as if you're separate from yourself, right? This takes some skill and some practice. It's one thing to do it in a calm situation. It's another thing to do it in the middle of pressure and fear and anxiety and, like, impulsive kind of intense emotion. But when you're, like, going through your feed, or when you're talking to people, or when you're just living and going through life, right, things happen. Like, someone might come to you and just start really hyping something up to you and making it sound like this thing is the most amazing thing ever. And if you're really impulsive, you'll just think, I'm doing this now. I don't care about anything. I'm just going to do this, right? That's, like, very impulsive behavior. And what you want to do is just, when you feel those emotions and thoughts going through your head, you want to stop. Don't act. Whatever you do, don't pull the trigger. And then just view yourself from the third person and think, like, is this the right thing to do? Like, I know where I'm trying to go in the long term. Is this decision the right thing to do? Now, you'll find when you can remove yourself from yourself, you're a lot more objective, right? And this is a great way to stop yourself from going down rabbit holes or making dumb decisions or being impulsive or basically, you know, buying or doing a shiny object, right? Now, the third one is to slow the fuck down. And what you need to understand is that business isn't, like, for most businesses and most entrepreneurs, this isn't a high frequency, like, trading kind of thing, right? It's not about who can be the most reactive to all of the stimuli in the market in real time, every second and every moment of every day. That person is not going to win the long-term business game, right? Now, that person might have a chance at, like, some high-frequency day trading stuff, but not in, like, most businesses, right? And really, the way to move fast is to move slow. This is kind of inverting this philosophy again. And this really changed me a lot when I learned this. But I realized that with some time, and often it takes some time to accrue before you realize that all of these fast, rapid decisions you made were really stupid. With some time, you start to live with the consequences of your actions and your decisions that you made a year ago or whatever. And you start to realize there's a pattern to all of this, and that a lot of these things that are ruining your life right now and ruining your business and really just sucking badly, they're the byproducts of these decisions you made in a hurry without really thinking things through, right? And so, of course, it sounds like you might think that if you're in business or whatever, that you should make decisions rapidly and move through everything rapidly, right? But really, you want to slow down a bit and you want to limit the number of decisions you have to make, because then you can think about them more carefully, right? So you want to do less stuff and you want to simplify the hell out of your life and your business and everything. And then you really want to take your finger off the trigger, view yourself objectively in the third person, and just slow down. Like, take some time to make some decisions, right? Especially if these decisions are going to be hard to undo or cause some downstream effects in the second, third, fourth order. Like, you really want to be a bit slower with those. And I often find that taking a few days to let major decisions kind of settle and just see whether what I should do helps a lot. I used to make impulsive decisions all the time with my business because I just thought that's what you do, that's how you scale. But then I saw what that did, and then I realized, like, I actually would have moved a lot faster, and I'd be much more successful and much further ahead if I'd gone a bit slower back there, right? So, slow down. Now, this doesn't mean paralyze yourself and to just lie in bed anxious and never make a decision, right? It just means slow down. So instead of making a decision in 5 seconds, or immediately, or within 10 minutes, like, even if you know what you're going to do, right, just still give yourself, like, 24 to 48 hours, right? You can write down your argument for why you should do it or why you shouldn't do it, and then even if you're certain that's it, just put it on a piece of paper and just leave it for 24 to 48 hours. Then come back and read it through. I guarantee you, you'll be amazed at how many times that you look at it and you're like, what was I thinking? Because your emotions are wavy, and they really affect your decision making. And even when you think something has a sound logical argument, when you look at it in like 24 to 48 hours, you realize that you're insane, right? So that's a good one. Now, the fourth one is let universe scream at you. What's that? Well, this is a cool one. And when you hear about something, right, most people, they've got a billion, like, to-do lists, and they've all got all of these notes and everything, and they're constantly writing down things they need to do. Like, someone just mentions something once, probably by accident, and someone's like, I knew it, I need to do that. Right? I see this in, like, all the time in my industry, which is kind of sad, and kind of makes me not even want to be in it. But people, like, they see or hear one person talk about one thing once with no evidence and not even any argument, and then they're like, I'm doing that. Like, chatbots, doing it. Facebook ads, doing it. Okay, like, we need this video, let's do it. Like, events, do it. Like, book, do it. Like, they just, like, live chat on our website, do it. Pop-ups, like, they just do everything. Even if they hear it once, it's craziness, right? And remember that what we don't do more defines us than what we do do. And sometimes not doing something makes more of a statement and makes more, like, of an effect than doing something a lot. So let the universe scream at you. What does it mean? Well, instead of, like, writing down everything that you are ever told or ever see or ever think about, try just not writing it down. Like, if you really need to do something, like, you know, pick up someone, like, tomorrow at 3 o'clock, or if you need to, like, you know, pay rent at this time or pay bill, right? Those things you should still have a to-do list for, because we know we need to do those ones, okay? But I'm talking more about, like, ideas about what you're going to do. So, like, should I do this funnel? Should I do this type of website? Should I start this business? Or should I change my product or my service or my pricing? Or should I make some other kind of change that isn't a to-do list item that needs to be done? Don't write those ones down. Like, just try this out. I see people all the time, they ask me, like, at my events and things, they're like, Sam, what do you use for writing down all your ideas? And I'm like, dude, I don't write them down. I just let it go. Because the truth is that if something's really important, it will keep popping up. It'll keep coming back. It'll keep popping up, and it will start to get angry. And it will be like, the universe will basically start to scream at you right in front of your face that you need to do this thing. And when it does that, do it. That's how I basically keep a to-do list of things. I basically wait until, like, I'm aware of a lot of these things, like, that I should do or am contemplating doing, but I typically don't get around to doing it unless it's just screaming at me, because at that point I know that it's something I should do, right? But, and a lot of the time those things I do, they turn out to be very wise decisions, and they come right at the right time. But when I do something like prematurely, and it's because I really just got one tiny signal that wasn't even a signal and I did it anyway, it turned out to take a lot of time, and it was perceived as totally useless by basically everybody, right? So it was just a waste of time. So just let the universe scream at you when it's not things like, you know, pick someone up or go to this appointment or whatever. Those things, they're time sensitive and they're events. But these initiatives, let your to-do list sort itself through like it coming at you, right? This is especially true for like changing your products. Like, your customers might say all sorts of things like, oh, you should add this feature, or you should change this, or you should do this. And people that react to those singular instances, they build a Frankenstein fucking spaceship product that nobody wants. Because they basically, it's just a random collection of crap that people didn't mean. And then they're like, oh, I didn't want that. Sorry, I don't want that. And that sucks. So you shouldn't be reactive to all of these things in singular instances. But the things that everyone is saying repetitively at louder and louder volumes at shorter and shorter intervals, like more and more frequently, these things are the things you should probably do. And that's what makes a great product. Not doing things that aren't important and doing the things that are important, right? Often people let the trivial, meaningless, useless thing no one wants take priority over the thing everyone wants, because they've got a list of 1,000 things, and this one was first on the list. And really, the 1,000th thing on the list is what users want the most, but yeah. So let the universe scream it. 5. Is to distance yourself from the hype. Distance from hype. So what do I mean by this? Well, hype is a dangerous thing. I personally despise it. And it's basically like a bubble or an echo chamber or basically just a collection or group of people that repeat the same things to each other and use each other's like agreeance with their statement as feedback and further evidence that what they are thinking and doing is more right than what they thought, and that feeds back onto the other person, then they're in this incestuous psychotic relationship, and it grows exponential and that's how we get a bubble, right? Like, and then there's always a collapse. Whenever there's something that goes like that, there is always something coming. And this is especially true, just think of something recently, like Bitcoin, right? I swear, no matter what I did, Bitcoin was just coming at me. I got in an Uber and some guy was talking about Bitcoin. You get out on the streets and people are talking about Bitcoin. You overhear people talking about Bitcoin. Bitcoin's bloody everywhere. You just go on the internet and try not to find any Bitcoin, and it's everywhere. Even my staff were talking about Bitcoin. It was everywhere. And I had to try really hard to like not get involved in this whole Bitcoin nonsense, right? And so you have to distance yourself from the hype and be wary of it. But sometimes you can do this like physically. So Warren Buffett's a perfect example. Warren Buffett has his office in Omaha, and that's like in the middle of nowhere, right? You'd think Warren Buffett, okay, that guy's in business, so he might be in New York, or he might be in Silicon Valley or something, right? Surely you want to be where all the action is. No. And when people have asked Buffett why he chose there, he says he wants to be out of the noise. He says he wants to be out of the chaos, because when you're in the hype machine, you're susceptible to groupthink and extremely popular delusions and the madness of the crowd, right? And this is a bad thing. Like, quite often the best investors are the ones that are outsiders, and they have unconventional thinking and they're contrarians. And that requires discipline, and it requires being separate from the hype. And so this is the exact reason why Peter Thiel left Silicon Valley and moved to LA as well. And so when I was making a decision about where I was going to live, I was like, New York's too intense. San Francisco, it's has been basically like it's gone well past its curve. I mean, Silicon Valley was popular in its infancy because it was cheap and counterculture, and it had a diverse range of opinions and beliefs. And now it's the most expensive place ever, and it's an echo chamber. Everyone shares the exact same opinion, and if you speak out against it, they'll like bite your head off. So it's become the inverse of what it once was, yet everyone still believes it is what it has been, which is kind of crazy. So that's why I chose LA, but not only LA, but El Segundo, because it's cheap there, and it's still close enough to these hot places like LA and San Francisco to get good talent, and it's got a good climate, and it's got these things. It's close enough to these things to be able to get the benefits, but it's not within these things, so it doesn't get the cons. It has like Florida prices in California, yet, and it's probably more a better location for employees than the main city hubs, and your rent's probably going to be like quite actually probably 6 times less than San Francisco or Santa Monica or LA or something. So distance from the hype, very important. Now, 6. Regain your sanity. Now, quite often when I'm thinking about doing something that is like related to a shiny object, I feel very impulsive, and I feel like I'm about to pull the trigger on something, and I'm like, all right, this I've been here before. This is a dangerous place. So I take my finger off the trigger, and then I view it objectively, and sometimes I'm not even able to view it objectively. If I can't, if I try to go out there in that third person and view myself like that, if I fail to do that and I just get sucked back into the intensity of the moment, then I know that I am probably sleep deprived. Or these emotions is so intense that I definitely need to get out, right? So when you want to regain your sanity, nothing beats that. Nothing is better for regaining sanity than sleep. If you sleep deprive yourself, you'll actually go a bit crazy, and your intelligence gets reduced significantly. So getting like 8 hours of sleep, or taking a day off, like I take one day off a week on Sunday, and I would work that day if I actually thought I'd be more productive and get more stuff done. But I find one day off a week makes me more objective about what I should do, because it's not so much a game of doing and doing the most. It's more a game of doing the right things well. So that one day off helps me like regain clarity and objectivity about what I should do. It does take some time away, so it probably reduces my overall ability to do, but my choice of what to do is more of a force multiplier on this equation than the linear like additive of just more time input, right? So like I can influence the outcome of this in a much more powerful way by still working hard but taking one day off to make sure my choices of what I'm doing are more objective and more clear, right? And also taking a vacation, that can help a lot. So I take about 7 days off every 90 days, and I align it with Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. That's a great way to do it. So I'm basically doing like sprints of 90 days in business, and I plan initiatives for each quarter and for each year, and then I take 7 days off. It's also very good if you work long hours and you want to like have a wife that isn't angry at you, then it's also very helpful. Now, what else have we got? 7, cross-pollinate your sources. So most people, they belong to like one incestuous community, right? They might join like some cult or what might be called a community, and then they are so like sucked into all of these, this belief system and these people that they're surrounding themselves with. And they don't realize that the reason why that they think it's the right thing to do is because everyone in there thinks it's the right thing to do, and that anyone who doesn't think it's the right thing to do will get kicked out. So they fully just forget that one. And then they basically just think that's just the way it is, and they get sucked in and they start becoming crazy, basically. Like, this typically happens in cults, but really any community is still a cult. It's still like a religion. If we think of what a religion is, it's basically like some central thesis or book or something and some core principles that together create some philosophy and worldview, and people like to adopt it, right? That's basically what a religion is, or a cult is, or what any community or anything is. So you want to make sure that you belong to these things, but cross-pollinate them, right? Don't just go to one. Because this is how you get, like, this is how you get real crazy and make some bad decisions and start getting sucked in by shiny objects. So if you're like, I see this badly in like digital marketing and funnel people and all of these, like, they get so sucked into marketing that they think the only thing that matters is marketing, right? And that's kind of crazy. And you even see them marketing about like they've got a course on marketing, and then they're marketing about the marketing that talks about the marketing, and you can see this doing some strange things, right? And really you want to, that's the sort of like incest kind of like mutated child of like a, of groupthink, basically. So it's all very well to belong to different communities, but go to different ones and try visiting some that are far outside of your space. So I really like, I still need to learn about marketing and things like this and digital marketing, right? But I also like to learn about like computer science or engineering, even civil engineering and software engineering. I also like to learn about statistics, and data science is something I like learning a lot about. And then also finance and mergers and acquisitions, tax structuring, accounting, hostile takeovers, and the stock market, philosophy, all sorts of different things. And I like looking at different eras in time. I like to get a nice mixture of things, right? And at first, it seems like this mixture is strange, and probably, like, the whole world seems to think that you should just do one thing only, never, ever do anything that isn't that. But, you know, really, if we think of what specialization is, it's more, it's basically learning more and more about less and less until you know everything about nothing. That's specialization, right? And so you don't want to do that. You want to cross-pollinate some things, make some unique mixtures, because that's where creativity really begins. Then 8, out of sight, out of mind. This is a great, simple method. And, you know, if we can't see something and we don't know about it at all, then it's not really going to affect us, right? That's a really great way to deal with shiny object syndrome. So if you don't go on Facebook and scroll through your feed, or if you go to Facebook but you use a newsfeed killer, right? Or if you delete the Facebook mobile app off your phone and you delete all the apps off your phone, you want to really take all of these places, like think of all the shiny objects you've ever been screwed over by. And then think, where the hell did I discover this shiny object? And it'll probably be able to trace it back to social media and looking at other people and being envious and having FOMO about their life that was artificially made to look good so that you got sucked in, and then you realize that it wasn't what it was, and it wasn't even what they were saying that it was, and everyone basically got screwed and wasted a bunch of time and money and just had to resort back to the basics, right? So think of everywhere where that's ever happened and trace it back to where the hell did you, that source come from. Start getting rid of those sources, right? And out of sight, out of mind, it's a great way to, like, I don't watch the news, I don't, like, I'm not on anyone's emails list, I don't follow anybody, and I don't really go to any conferences or events, and I basically just stay the hell out of all of these places where there's a lot of shiny objects and hype and groupthink. And I try to just watch things from a little bit of a distance, right? And when something is, when I'm quite objectively sure that something is the right thing to do, I'll do it. And I'll do it pretty fucking intensely. But, and I'll probably do it to the end, right? I'll really do it. When I find something that's really works, I will just unleash hell on it. But I'm very selective and slow about the things that I will do. And so I tend to watch things from a distance, and only when I know it's the right thing to do, I'll just unleash on it. But I barely do anything which is kind of like, that's how I have the energy and resources and focus to do that when I find the thing. So that's a way that you can reduce shiny objectness, if that's even a thing, by getting it out of sight. And then the ninth one, which is our final one today, is focus on value. Now, when assessing something, you always want to think, like, what is the value? So, this was pretty simple. Like, in the book by Benjamin Graham called The Intelligent Investor, which is, like, the book that inspired, like, Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett was actually in Benjamin Graham's class at college. He's influenced him so much, he even says this, like, openly and publicly, that, you know, this is where Warren Buffett learned his paradigm and his worldview. This even influenced, like, if you read Amazon's Letters to Shareholders by Bezos or Google's Letters to Shareholders by Larry and Sergey, they even state clearly that Benjamin Graham created their financial worldview. And Benjamin Graham basically believes in value investing. And he has a powerful statement that I'll never forget where he says that in the short term, the market is a voting machine. But in the long term, the market is a weighing machine. And what he means by that is in the short term, things will always swing with popularity and fashion, right? Opinion, basically, perception. Like everyone thinks this is the thing to do or this is the hot thing. And then it creates all this hype and then that creates more hype, right? But then eventually, like, so in the short term, if you are only planning to make a short term win, then you should absolutely play with this hype thing. But long term, it's always weighing. And everybody and every company and everything will always get weighed. It's just inevitable. And what you want to think is, how do I build something? Or how do I become someone that wants to be weighed? Not voted, weighed. Because these are very different things. If you're somebody that wants to be voted, then you're very short-term optimized. You want to win based on perception and based on what others think and believe, and you're basically manipulating this warped kind of like abstraction that isn't real, but that people think is real, which at that time is real, but will later become not real, and they'll weigh you and see what it really is, and then you'll be fucked, right? So that happens to companies all the time. It happened to Bitcoin. It happens to basically every bubble in the world ever, and every great delusion, like Theranos and her big, whatever you call that, scam, whatever. And so, if you look at these, the common pattern is that these people focused on perception. But if you look at cases where they've built really great, long-lasting value, often the perception in the beginning was bad, and people thought, hey, this is, like, stupid. And people, they got ridiculed, and they didn't care. They just knew that they'd get weighed eventually. And so, when you're making a decision, focus on value. Think, in the long term, how will this be weighed? Don't think in the short term, is this hot or not? Is this fashionable? Is this a trend? Don't think about that crap. Just think, how is this going to get weighed? And make your decisions based on what it's going to be when it's weighed. Focus on value. So that's it for today's video. How to not get screwed over by shiny objects by 1. Inverting your philosophy. 2. Finger off the trigger. 3. Slow down. 4. Let the universe scream at you. 5. Distance from hype. 6. Regain your sanity. 7. Cross-pollinate sources. 8. Out of sight, out of mind. And 9. Focus on value and weighing things. So that's it for today's video. If you liked it, click that like button and then click that subscribe button, because I release a video like this once a week on a Tuesday. And if you like this one, you'll probably like some other ones. And let me know what you thought in the comments. I look at them and I get feedback from it, and that influences what videos I might make. So do it. Thanks for watching. See you soon.